Funding for Capital Report is provided by the following. The Able Trust, helping businesses to hire workers with disabilities. Information about the benefits of hiring people with a wide range of disabilities is available at abletrust.org or 850-224-4493. The Able Trust, empowerment, education, employment. WFSU-FM, Tallahassee. From the state capitol, Florida Public Radio brings you Capitol Report.
State lawmakers are getting ready to redraw the Senate's borders, but as they return to Tallahassee, some Republicans are questioning the party's tactics when it comes to redistricting.
You can get elected to Congress without ever having to go and talk to any black voters at all. And I think that that's bad for the party.
Also tonight, who is the likeliest person to follow Marco Rubio into the United States Senate?
And you hear a lot of key words. You hear fought for, sponsored, wrote a letter, gave a speech. What you don't hear is, this is what I got done.
We'll also look at the possibility of a Florida law that supporters say is based on similar statutes in other states, but opponents say is not. And we'll delve into what might be going on with all the arrests of state prison guards lately. I'm Tom Flanagan, and this is Capitol Report. Next week, Florida lawmakers will be putting their noses to the grindstone for the fourth time this year as the legislature prepares to revise Florida's state Senate districts. Nick Evans reports state and federal lawmakers traded barbs about how borders are drawn.
For the next 3 weeks, Florida's lawmakers will be working to redraw the state Senate borders, but they'll also be conducting committee hearings ahead of January's regular session. So far this year, the members have repeatedly demonstrated their aptitude for dysfunction. And while tempers seem to have cooled, there doesn't appear to be a contingency plan for another meltdown.
We're going to have to wait and see. You know, all we can do is give the members the best opportunity to get things done.
That's Senate President Andy Gardner. He and other state leaders spoke at this year's annual legislative planning session hosted by the Associated Press. And state legislators are beginning their work on Senate maps while a judge's recommendation for Florida's congressional borders returns to the state Supreme Court. Republican Congressman Ron DeSantis is making a bid for Florida's open Senate seat, and he's critical of how his party has handled reapportionment.
You know, the Republicans have always kind of joined with, African-American Democrats to create the heavily black districts and then have the other districts whiter because it guarantees certain Republican seats. And I understand that. I think, though, that that's been a little short-sighted from the Republican perspective. Just because we have so many people, you can get elected to Congress without ever having to go and talk to any black voters at all. And I think that that's bad for the party.
Senate Minority Leader Arthenia Joyner is a bit more direct.
It should be shocking that we are here doing this. How often does a legislative body formally confess to purposely violating the very Constitution that each of them swore on the Bible to uphold? How often do they get chastised by the state Supreme Court for destroying evidence or misleading the public?
Staffers from both chambers have released a total of 6 maps that will serve as the starting point for discussion. This stands in contrast to the single base map released ahead of the congressional redistricting session. The lower court judge was somewhat critical of the mapmakers' efforts in that round, ruling they should have experimented with more configurations to improve compactness. But House Speaker Steve Crisafulli defended their work.
The clarity of our understanding from what we were supposed to do there was to bring forth constitutionally compliant maps, not more constitutionally compliant maps. I mean, so, you know, we did what we felt was, or should I say our staffers did what they felt was correct. And you know, Judge Lewis came back with something a little bit different than what we got from the Supreme Court. So our understanding.
Even before staffers unveiled the 6 base maps, Miami Gardens Democratic Senator Oscar Brainin had submitted a version of his own. And he's not in love with all the staff submissions.
I think the real issue is not the number of maps. The real issue is all of these maps are staff maps. Nobody has a vested interest in defending the maps. Nobody can defend the maps that is my colleague.
That said, the math could become important if the bulk of the Senate doesn't line up behind one proposal or decide to approve multiple submissions. Traditionally, the chambers give one another deference in drafting borders, so the Senate will be in the driver's seat as the process unfolds. But with 7 submissions and just 40 members, there's a greater chance of senators splintering into different factions. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Nick Evans.
The race to succeed Florida's U.S. Senator Marco Rubio is getting crowded, and not everyone is making the cut. But as Lynn Hatter reports, some of those vying for Rubio's chair are starting to make their case for the job.
There are 13 men and women going for one open U.S. Senate seat. But with gridlock in Washington, why would anyone want that job? Some people believe they can change things.
I know how truly special this country and this state are, because I have lived in places where the rights we take for granted don't even exist.
That's an ad for Pam Keith, a Democratic candidate and attorney who served in the U.S. Navy. She's a long-shot candidate. But there are others, like current Congressman Alan Grayson, whose bombastic style has riled both sides of the political aisle.
And in the past 2 years, I have passed more Grayson bills are now the law of the land, than any other member of Congress, 15 of them. 15 Grayson bills are now the law of the land. Passed by the House, passed by the Senate, signed into law by the President.
In the Libertarian camp, there's Augustus Sol Invictus, the subject of a strange battle in the Libertarian Party, which, no lie, involves a goat. But there are some names that have risen to the top of the heap, like Congressman Dave Jolly. He touts himself as a true conservative.
Listen, I am a conservative who believes a conservative, less government, more personal freedom, less tax, less regulation policies are right for the future of the country, right for the future of the state of Florida. It stands in sharp contrast to the other side of the aisle, whose current frontrunner in the presidential race in New Hampshire is a registered socialist. We have very different views of policies that are right for the future of the country.
And there's also Republican Congressman Ron DeSantis, who spoke about Congress's low approval ratings.
A lot of Republican voters who went out in droves to support Republicans to take the House and to retake the Senate, they don't feel that the leadership has followed through on a lot of the promises that were made.
Next up, Democratic Congressman Patrick Murphy. Murphy, a former Republican turned centrist Democrat, says his political awakening came in 2010.
And I also saw 182 million gallons of oil, you know, spilt in the Gulf of Mexico. And saw my friends on the other side of the aisle talking about, you know, more, you know, drilling, more offshore drilling. We need more of this. And I said, you know what? Not only am I going to change parties, become a Democrat, but I'm going to do something about it.
Then there's Florida's Lieutenant Governor, Carlos Lopez Cantera.
Now, you look at D.C. and you look at candidates and federal officials, and you hear a lot of key words. You hear fought for, sponsored, wrote a letter, gave a speech. What you don't hear is, this is what I got done. My whole career has been about what I could get done.
Murphy, Grayson, DeSantis, Lopez, Cantera, and Jolly were a part of the Associated Press's annual legislative planning session at the state capitol. But there are other potential candidates, like North Florida Congresswoman Gwen Graham, who's keeping quiet about her future plans.
My commitment is what I ran to do, which is to represent North Florida and bring the North Florida way to Washington, which is what I've been doing, and it is working. And that's what I'm focused on.
Florida's ongoing redistricting battle is shaking up the state's voting lines, and Graham's district could tilt sharply to the right, increasing the chances she could lose her seat. Collectively, the declared candidates have raised more than $12 million in their bids to win Marco Rubio's Senate seat. They have until June to meet Florida requirements to appear on the November ballot. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Lynn Hatter.
Still to come on Capitol Report, we'll hear some weigh in as to why a number of recent correctional officer arrests stem from the North Florida area.
In the northern region, investigators are a lot stronger. I also feel like if they would take the investigators that are here in North Florida and transfer them to South Florida, you would have just as many, if not more.
In a push for a bill titled the Pastor Protection Act, Florida lawmakers are pointing to other states with similar rules on the books. But lawmakers in those states say their laws were passed under different circumstances.
They're either ill-informed or they're disingenuous. They can choose.
And the issue of fracking in Florida appears teed up for consideration during the upcoming legislative session.
I think this is such a significant third rail sort of issue with strong opinions on both sides that it's something that I think the voters should decide.
Support for Capital Report is provided by CGI, a partner to government and industry delivering built-for-government information technology solutions for nearly 40 years. CGI, committed to providing IT results Florida can count on. Details on the web at cgi.com.
In recent months, multiple correctional officers have been arrested for crimes ranging from assaulting inmates to smuggling contraband into correctional facilities. As Sasha Cordner reports, all of the reports of misconduct within the state's prison system hail from the North Florida region.
Over the course of a five-month period, the Florida Department of Corrections has announced the arrests of close to 15 correctional officers, two of whom are facing federal charges.
My question is, why weren't they doing that prior to our committee meeting, last year when we called everybody up and found out what was actually going on when we put employees under oath?
That's Baker Republican Senator Greg Evers. He's in charge of the Senate's effort to reform Florida's prisons in his capacity as chair of the Senate Criminal Justice Committee. And some arrests occurred in or around his district. He helped the governor and Corrections Secretary Julie Jones put some changes in place during this past session, and he's hoping to do more with a bill that includes creating a third-degree felony for those correctional officers who harm inmates by withholding clothes, food, and medical care. If that change had been in place, one Lancaster correctional officer arrested a couple weeks ago might be facing those charges. In his case, he did not report an inmate assault by other prisoners and delayed medical care for the injured inmate. Evers commends Jones and the Office of Inspector General for their work in bringing these people to justice, but his main attributor to these North Florida regional arrests are the investigators.
Well, I feel, number one, part of the reason that that we're having more arrests in the northern region is the investigators are a lot stronger and doing a better job right now. And I think it's more it was more prevalent as far as what was going on. But I also feel like that if they would take the investigators that are here in North Florida and transfer them to South Florida, you would have just as many, if not more.
But Secretary Julie Jones has a different take.
I haven't looked at the demographics. I would have to go back and see where those arrests were made. But I think instead of looking geographically, if you look at the types of facilities that these are coming from, it's based on the inmate population, whether it's a higher risk population, mental health.
And after looking at some of the numbers, she'd be right. With the exception of a couple, most of the arrests did occur in correctional facilities with about 1,200 or more inmates, which she says accounts for a lot of high-stress situations.
We have a lot of issues associated with corrections officers right now, and with PTSD, stress, and there's been a number of studies that indicate that PTSD is as high as military individuals coming back from overseas. So I would look more at the inmate population and the job associated with that individual and not the geographics.
A lot of the arrests were for smuggling contraband into correctional facilities, two from Wakulla Correctional. The others were correctional facilities in Madison, Okaloosa, and Liberty counties. Three arrests occurred in a matter of 13 days. The department's inspector general's office is not the only one tasked with investigating these cases. There are also cases brought before an independent body tasked with certifying officers and watching officer conduct. It's called the Criminal Justice Standards and Training Commission within the Florida Department of Law Enforcement. A recent report by OPAGA states that over a 10-year period, 88% of contraband cases brought before the commission resulted in correctional officers' loss of certification, which troubles Fleming Island Republican Senator Rob Bradley. During a recent hearing of Evers' committee, Bradley questioned OPAGA's senior legislative analyst Jim Clark about those stats.
That does say that, right? I'm not missing it. There's 12% of people who it was determined by the commission that they smuggled contraband in, but they did not lose their job.
That's correct.
Okay. That just blows my mind, but thank you.
A recent audit of the prison agency shows contraband as particularly problematic, and Jones says she's continually taking steps to reduce that within the correctional facilities. She says ideally she'd like to combat that using technology like they do in the federal prisons, But she says for now, the focus is on visitors, cameras, and work squads.
A lot of contraband is thrown over the fence at night. And so we have to look for contraband, not only inside the prison, but our work squads that go out. We have contraband hidden associated with parks in areas where they know, in the bushes where they know that they're going to be doing yard maintenance and whatnot. So it takes gathering intelligence, so we listen to phone calls, we look at mail, and there's always indicators of usually family members that are trying to get contraband into an inmate. So it's a wholesale problem that's not just fixed by one method.
Contraband isn't the only problem. At least 5 arrests also stem from correctional officers using excessive use of force and lying about it. 2 more arrests at Franklin Correctional Institution were on the federal level, and Evers says that needs to be taken more seriously.
But then by the same token, you know, I want the correction officers to understand when you have to use force, you use force. Because if you don't, you're jeopardizing not only your safety, but the safety of your fellow employees. And if you use force, use whatever force that you need to get the situation under control. And I would be the first to stand with that officer and say, you know, that is not unnecessary use of force.
Meanwhile, state lawmakers are soon expected to take up the proposal adding the third-degree felony provision if officers harm an inmate. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Sasha Kortner.
Lawmakers in Florida are holding up a California law pushed by that state's LGBT community as evidence their Florida Pastor Protection Act is friendly. But Regan McCarthy reports West Coast officials are pointing out subtle differences.
The so-called Pastor Protection Act is meant to protect churches and clergy from lawsuits or losing their tax-exempt status if they decline to perform a marriage for religious reasons. Longwood Republican Representative Scott Plakin is behind the measure.
Well, in light of the recent Supreme Court decision and as quickly as culture and law is changing, we thought it would be a good idea to put this explicitly in Florida statutes.
Florida's LGBT or lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender community has raised concerns about the measure. But Plakin says he's not sure why.
Well, I'm a little surprised by that here in Florida because in Texas, the group Equality Texas dropped their opposition to the bill there. And in California, there was an openly gay member of the Senate passed similar legislation a few years back, actually.
Plakin is talking about California Senator Mark Leno. Leno says he questions lawmakers holding up his legislation as an example.
They're either ill-informed or they're disingenuous. They can choose.
Leno represents San Francisco. His life partner died from complications relating to HIV/AIDS. He is openly gay, and yes, he authored a bill that would protect churches and faith leaders from being forced to conduct same-sex marriages. But Leno says there are significant differences between Florida's bill and California's law.
We added the word civil before the word marriage throughout our family code.
Leno says the idea was to codify in law that marriage is a civil, not a religious contract. Plakin calls that a small difference.
The fact that he says the word civil in the bill, I'm not seeing where that makes it any difference in substance than what we're doing in Florida, because Florida, it is a civil ceremony as it sits, as well as in most cases religious. So I think that distinction, I would not agree that there's a difference there.
If Plakin's argument sounds familiar, maybe that's because it's similar to the argument members of the LGBT community are using against his bill. While Plakin argues it's not necessary to codify in law that marriages are civil because that's already part of the code, LGBT activists argue that it's not necessary to codify that pastors and churches are protected because that's part of the First Amendment. Leno says the inclusion of the word civil created significant Republican opposition to his bill, even causing California's Republican Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger to veto the measure. Plus, Leno says there's the issue of timing. Leno points out his legislation passed in 2012. He says that's before the Supreme Court legally recognized same-sex marriage across the country. And while California was in the middle of a fight over a ballot measure called Proposition 8, which would have banned same-sex marriage in the state.
My motivation, again, came from the experience of seeing the truth abused by opponents of equal marriage rights. Going on television and claiming that unless voters pass Prop 8, current law would force clergy to perform marriages antithetical to their faith angered me. And I thought, how do we deal with that?
So, Leno says he authored the bill, which does have similarities to Florida's bill. And eventually it passed, with the support of the LGBT lobbying group Equality California. But would Equality support that legislation if it were up for discussion now? The group's representatives say no. But Plakin says California's law isn't the only similar legislation that's gotten LGBT support. He says Mary Gonzalez, an openly pansexual Texas representative, spoke in favor of a similar bill when her state's Republican legislature considered it. Plakin read her comments during his presentation of the Florida measure.
This is what she said on the House, and I would concur with these comments. Someone asked me that if I voted for the bill, would that mean I'm allowing discrimination? I said no. In fact, I'm fighting discrimination. The biggest argument that I have with people when we're trying to promote LGBT justice is that we're trying to infringe upon religious beliefs. That is not the goal. I truly believe that there is space for LGBT justice and religious freedom, and this, referring to this bill, is the space for that.
The Texas measure initially faced opposition from Democrats and the LGBT community, but eventually it garnered bipartisan support, with some members commenting the measure could help protect faith leaders who want to conduct same-sex marriages. The Texas measure also passed before the U.S. Supreme Court's ruling extending marriage rights to same-sex couples across the country. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Regan McCarthy.
The Sunshine State's unemployment rate for September stands at 5.2%. That's down 0.2 percentage point from August's revised number. September's preliminary figures are the lowest for Florida since way back in February of 2008. The latest monthly data released by the Department of Economic Opportunity today showed the number of unemployed Floridians last month at just under 500,000. That's a drop of around 12,000 from August in a total workforce of approximately 9.5 million. Florida's unemployment rate continues to hover just above the national mark, which has been stuck at 5.1% for two consecutive months. Statewide, the biggest employment gains from August to September were in the fields of leisure and hospitality. The construction industry also added jobs. Meanwhile, manufacturing actually shrank by about 1,500 positions, and there were also 6,600 fewer government jobs, most of those in the local government arena. You're listening to Capital Report on Florida Public Radio. I'm Tom Flanagan. Finally tonight, with Halloween approaching, the specter of fracking looms over the legislative horizon. As we hear from Jim Ash, Governor Rick Scott hinted this week that the controversial oil and gas drilling technique will haunt environmentalists next session.
Earlier this week, Governor Rick Scott stood on the 22nd floor of the Capitol and hinted he would sign a highly controversial fracking bill. The measure strips local governments of their power to regulate the oil and gas drilling technique.
Well, I think anything like that we ought to focus on at the state level, and let's look at what we ought to do at the state level. I know there was some discussion last year that appeared something was going to pass, but it didn't at the end of session, and so I look forward to working with the legislature on that issue.
Only the day before, community activists packed the Collier County Commission chamber to demand a fracking ban. Aware the bill is a slam dunk, commissioners took a more pragmatic approach. They ordered their lobbyists to negotiate changes to the bill. It's urgent, Warren Commission staffer Tim Durham. He says the bill, as written, would allow drilling rigs in residential neighborhoods.
It's staff's position that you should retain that home rule power and seek to change this particular feature of the bill.
Fracking means pumping high-pressure water and toxic chemicals 2 miles underground to pulverize rock formations. The industry says it's perfectly safe, but some studies link it to water contamination and even minor earthquakes. But nobody disagrees the issue is highly charged. Last session, protesters jammed committee rooms and harangued lawmakers for hours. Democratic Senator Jeremy Ring of Margate felt the pressure.
You would have had to be living in a shell not to have heard how vocal they were and their fear.
Proposals to ban fracking never made it out of committee, and Ring felt trapped. He says he was forced to vote for the fracking bill because it sets up a regulatory framework and none exists now. Ring doesn't want that to happen again. He's filed a proposed constitutional amendment that would let voters decide if they want to allow fracking. He denies ducking a tough decision.
I think this is such a significant third rail sort of issue with strong opinions on both sides that it's something that I think the voters should decide.
Republican Representative Ray Rodriguez of Fort Myers says opponents of his bill are just blinded by fear. He wants to settle the issue with science. His bill imposes a moratorium while the state conducts a $1 million study. Rodriguez wants to know if the industry can use water much better.
How much water would be used if fracking were permitted in this state? And would all of that be fresh potable water? And can we sustain that type of usage?
The bill also requires companies to post a $5 million bond before drilling. And it lets the state deny permits to drillers with bad histories. Rodriguez says he's working with local governments to give them more comfort, but he says it's a mistake to let locals set their own rules. For example, he says a fracking ban in Bonita Springs outlaws an acid washing technique common in all wells.
What you have is a city in Bonita Springs that has passed an ordinance that was politically motivated and drawn so broadly that they've now outlawed the drilling of water wells in their city.
Rodriguez warns a patchwork of regulations won't work.
If you take that mistake and you replicate it by 400, which are the number of local governments that exist in Florida, you can see the chaos that would result.
Most of the legislature agrees. The bill passed the House last session and was hours from Senate approval when the session broke down over health care spending. Rodriguez says he's discussed the bill with Scott, but he's received no guarantees. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Jim Ash.
Our regular Capitol Report correspondents are Jim Ash, Sasha Cordner, Nick Evans, Lynn Hatter, Regan McCarthy, and Kate Payne. We also thank our contributing Florida Public Radio stations. Technical assistance for Capitol Report is provided by Taylor Cox, and I'm Tom Flanagan. Follow us on Twitter at FPR Cap Report, and join us again next week for more reports from the state capitol.
Audio copies of Capitol Report are available by calling 1-800-829-8809. You can also hear Capitol Report online, including archives of past shows, at fprn.org. Funding for Capitol Report is provided by the following: The Able Trust, helping donors make a difference through planned giving, putting donations to work so people with disabilities can too. On the web at abletrust.org. The Able Trust, empowerment, education, employment. WFSU-FM Tallahassee. This is Florida Public Radio.